So tonight we're going to discuss two sugyas, both coming up on today's daf, daf mem gimel in Bava Metzia. The first sugya we're going to discuss is the sugya of Tavra Ushasye, which we'll discuss. There's a famous machlokes achronim in terms of how to understand that Gemara, a very, very fundamental machlokes between the Ktsos HaChoshen and the Nesivos HaMishpat. We will discuss that momentarily. And then the second half of the sugya tonight, we are going to discuss the machlokes Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel about Shlichus Yad, about a person who is a shomer watching a pikadon. And we know that there is a prohibition of using the pikadon inappropriately, without any permission. So the institution of Shlichus Yad, Machloges Beisham Beisilel, whether one actually has to use the object, or even thinking or saying they're going to use the object, is that considered Shlichus Yad? We will discuss that the second half of this sugya. Okay, so without further ado, the first source is the Gemara, today's daf, daf mem gimel amud aleph. The Gemara says, Amar Rabba, Hai man de gazel chavisu de chamer mechavre. A person steals a barrel of wine from his friend. Meikara shav yezuza. Originally, when he stole it, it was worth one zuz. Hashta shavya arba. But now it's worth four zuz. So what's the halacha? Says the Gemara. Tavra ushasye. If he broke it or drank the wine when it was worth four zuz, when it appreciated in value, mishalem arba. Then he has to pay four zuz, the higher value of the wine. However, izbar memela. However, if it broke on its own, so then what's the halacha? Mishalim zuza. Then he only has to pay zuz, which was the value of the barrel of wine at the time of the theft. Right? So again, the Gemara says the halacha is a person steals a barrel of wine. Originally it was worth one zuz. Then it depreciates in value till four zuz. If the ganav, the gazlan, breaks the barrel when it was worth four zuz, or drinks the wine, he has to pay the higher value, the later value, four zuz, which is what it was worth at the time of drinking the barrel or breaking the barrel. But if it broke on its own, then he has to pay the value of the barrel at the time of the theft, which is only one zuz. Why? What's the difference between the two? Why should he pay the higher value if he breaks it, but the lower value if it broke on its own? Says the Gemara, my time. Kevan de'i'isa hadra lamar be'enei. Since if the object, the barrel, was still around, he would be able to return the object as is. Hahi shaita de'kashasi le'i otakatavar la kagazamina. That time, that moment that he drank the barrel or broke the barrel was the time that he ultimately stole it. Again, even though he stole it initially, but since he could have returned it as is if it wouldn't have broken, therefore, when he drank the barrel or broke the barrel, it was an additional, sounds like from the Gemara, it was an additional maisa of gzela, an additional theft. And therefore, the halacha is what? The Mishnah says in Bava Kamma, I believe, Usnan kol ha-gazlanin mishalmin keshas ha-gzela. Every gazlan pays the value of the theft at the time of the theft. However, isbar memela, if it would have broken on its own, mishalim zuza, he only has to pay one zuz. Why? My taima. Hasha lo aviv lo midi. He hasn't done anything to it. Amayka mechayvus lei, he shaita de gazla. The reason he's obligated to pay is for the original maisa gzela, and he shaita zuza hu deshavya. At that time, the object was worth one zuz. So again, the halacha is that when he steals the barrel, it was worth one zuz. He breaks it or drinks it, it was worth four zuz. The halacha, he has to pay four zuz. However, if it broke on its own, even though it was worth four zuz at the time that it was broken, since when he stole it, it was only worth one zuz, and he didn't do any additional damage to the barrel, he only pays the one zuz that it was worth at the time of the theft. That's Rabba's famous halacha of Tavra Oshasye. That Tavra Oshasye, when you do the damage of drinking it or breaking the barrel, you pay the higher value. But if the gazlan, if it broke on its own, then the gazlan only pays the initial lower value. That's the halacha. Now, there's a fundamental machlokes, achronim, how to understand this halacha of tavra ushasi. What is the nature of the obligation of the gazlan to pay the higher value of the barrel when he breaks the barrel intentionally or drinks the wine? Why do we say that now that he broke it or drank it, he pays the higher value? Why don't we revert to the original Maisa Gzela, the original time of the theft, when it was worth one zuz, what obligates him to pay now the higher value of four zuz, as opposed to in the case where it breaks on its own, he only has to pay one zuz? What's the nature of Tavra Oshasye, literally breaking it or drinking it, that he has to pay the higher value? And this is a world famous, not a world famous, but a fundamental machlokes between the Ktzais and the Nesivos, which is going to have implications in all of Hilchos Gzela, and a very, very important idea, and that's what we're going to discuss tonight. So in order to appreciate where the Ktzais and the Nesivos are coming from, we have to see a comment of the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Eidos, of all places. In source 2, the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Eidos, Simin Lama Dalas of Zayin, paskins as follows. Ganav in source 2. Ganav v'chein gazlan psul me'edus ve'esha ganav v'gazlan. We know that a person who steals is pasul edus. He's not allowed to give testimony in court. He's not reliable. He's obviously suspect when it comes to ne'monis. He can't be trusted in court, and therefore he is pasul le'edus. He is what we call a rasha d'chamas. He is not trustworthy in the realm of mammon. So ganav and gazlan are pasul le'edus from the time of the theft. And even if he returns the object that he stole, until he does tshuva, and until it's clear to us that he has changed his ways, he is still going to be pasul le'edus. That's what the Shulchan Aruch paskens. That's a straightforward halacha. A ganav and a gazlan are pasul le'edus. Yeah? Okay. Now, says the Shulchan Aruch, however, hacholik in the parentheses, hacholik im haganav einu nifsal. Now the Ramah quotes from the Rivash that if you have a person who divides the theft with a ganav, meaning, let's say I really like Howard's watch, but I'm not. I've said that many times to Evan. He's never done that to me. I really like Howard's watch, but I don't have the audacity to take it off his wrist. So I say, Dr. Katz, do me a favor, take Howard's watch. And Dr. Katz is a really nice guy. He says, sure, Rabbi Pear, I'm going to go get Howard's watch for you. So he goes and gets the watch, and then Dr. Katz sells the watch, and we split the profits. So did I do the Maisa Gneva, the Gzela? No, Dr. Katz did. I'm called a Cholikim Haganav. I'm splitting the profits with the Ganav, but I didn't do the Maisa Gneva per se. So says the Ramah, quoting the Rivash, that who's going to be pasul edus? Dr. Katz, because he did the Maisa Gneva. Now, I'm not such a nice guy. I was part of the scheme, and I told Dr. Katz to do it, and I'm splitting the profits with Dr. Katz, but since I didn't do the Maisa Gneva, I'm not going to be pasul edus. Even though I'm holding on to money, value, that does not belong to me, it belongs to Howard, but since I didn't do the Maisa Gneva, I'm not going to be pasul edus. That's what the Shulchan Aruch paskins, and then Shulchan Aruch also says, HaKofer B'Bikadon, Omalva, Amos Nifsal, the person who's covered Bikadon, is also Pasul Eidus. Meaning, if I'm watching an object, I'm a Shomer, and I deny ever being given the object to watch, that's called Kofar Bikadon. So the Shulchan Aruch paskins that a Kofar Bikadon is Pasul Eidus. So the question is as follows, and this is the question of the Urim Metumim. Well, who's the Urim Metumim? Rabbi Yonasan Abishitz. Rabbi Yonasan Abishitz was the Posek of Prague, I believe, in the 1700s. One of the Poske Hador in his time. And he wrote a sefer called Menisfar. But his sefer on Choshen Mishpat is called Urim V'tumim. And he has the following question on the Shulchan Aruch. What is the difference between the Ganav and the Cholikim HaGanav? Meaning, just like the Ganav is Pasul Eidus because he is holding on to money that does not belong to him, and that renders him what we call a Rasha d'chamas. He is a Rasha, he violates Torah law in the realm of money, in the realm of mammon. So too, the Cholikim HaGanav, the person who divides the profits, the person who is part of the scheme, the theft, even though he didn't do the Maisa Gneva per se, but right now he is holding on to money that doesn't belong to him, he should also be Pasul Eidus. What's the difference between Dr. Katz and Rabbi Pear? Dr. Katz did the Maisa Gneva. He's holding on to money that doesn't belong to him. And now, okay, it's true. I didn't take the watch from Howard. But I am holding on to Howard's money. yes, it's true, we sold the watch and now we're splitting the profits, but still, what's the difference? Am I not as bad of a guy as Dr. Katz? Why should it be that only the Ganav is Pasul Eidus, but the Cholik Im HaGanav is not Pasul Eidus? Aren't we both Ganavim? Aren't we both thieves? We're both holding on to money that doesn't belong to us. That is the question of the Tumah. Everyone hear the question? The question is, what's the difference between the actual Ganav who takes the money and the person who splits the profits with the Ganav? We're both Ganavim. We're both holding on to money that doesn't belong to us. So how could it be that only the person who actually steals the watch is Pasul Eidus? Why isn't the Cholik and the Ganav the one who divides the spoils, the profit with the Ganav? Why isn't he Pasul Eidus? That's the question of the Tumah. Okay, so the Ketzoyis HaChoshen says the following Chiddush. So you have to listen to this carefully. And he develops the following idea. Says the Ketzoyis, how do you define a Ganav? Who is a Ganav? Says the Ketzoyis, and he brings proofs, and we'll see in a moment. A Ganav, by definition, is a person who takes an object from the owner's reshus. A person who takes an object from the owner's reshus. That is the definition of a ganav. However, if you have a person who takes something which is already out of the reshus of the ganav, even though it doesn't belong to him, he's not a ganav. For example, we know, if you remember way back when in Bava Kama, we have the halacha of hagonid min haganav. Hagonid min haganav. A person who steals from a ganav. So let's say in our case, Dr. Katz takes Howard's watch. Okay, fine. So Dr. Katz is a ganav. Now, instead of me being part of Dr. Katz's thievery, I say, oh, I like the watch that Dr. Katz stole from Howard. I'm going to steal from Dr. Katz. And I go ahead and I steal from Dr. Katz. I'm what we call a gonev min haganav. I am stealing from the ganav. And what did the Gemara in Bava Kama say way back when, in the beginning of the Perek Merubah? The Gemara says Hagonav bin Haganav is pater from Kefel. Even though a Ganav who steals in, under normal circumstances, if he's caught by Edom, has to pay the penalty of Kefel, he pays the double payment, the double value of the object that he stole, the Gonav bin Haganav is pater. Why? Because the Torah says the Gunav mi beis ha'ish, that the object is stolen from the house of the ish, the owner, v'lo mi beis ha'ganav, right? The Gemara has that drasha, Gunav mi beis ha'ish, lo mi beis ha'ganav. And the Ktsos understands what the Gemara is telling us is that in order to be considered theft, in order to be considered halachic geneva, it has to be that you are taking an object from the owner's reshus. But once the object is already out of the owner's reshus, for example, Dr. Katz has already stolen Howard's watch. So when I go ahead and I take the watch from Dr. Katz, what am I doing? It's true. I'm holding on to something that doesn't belong to me. I'm holding on to Howard's watch. And Howard can take me to court to get the watch. But can you call me a ganav? No. A ganav, by definition, is not just a person who is holding on to money that doesn't belong to him. A ganav, by definition, is a person who takes the object from the owner's reshus. But once it's out of the owner's reshus, you can't call the guy a ganav. You can call him someone who's holding on to money that doesn't belong to him, and he has no right to hold on to it. But the halachic definition, the halachic category of geneva, is limited to a case where you go ahead and take the object from the owner's reshus, but once the owner no longer has shlita over it, once the owner no longer has his jurisdiction over the object that he owns, you can no longer call the person who takes it a ganav. That is the Ktsoyis' Chiddush. And he develops this idea. He proves it from many halachos. And says the Ktsois, that's why. Now, the question is, he asks on himself, if that's the case, then what's the pshat in Tavra Ushasye? Going back to our Gemara. We said that if you have a person who steals a barrel of wine, and he goes ahead and subsequently breaks or drinks the barrel of wine. So what's the halacha? So we said that even though it was worth one zuz at the time of the geneva, the initial geneva, if it was worth four zuz at the time that he drank the wine, how much does he have to pay? Four zuz. He has to pay four zuz. So asks the Ktsois, I don't understand. If I'm correct that once an object is stolen, it can't be stolen again. It can't be stolen again. So then, what do we say? Kol ha-gazlanim isham kishasa gzela. Then the halacha should be that in that case of Tabar Shaseh, the Gazan should only have to pay one zuz. Because since the object was already stolen, the initial moment when the person took the barrel of wine from the owner's rishus, that was the moment of Geneva. That was the moment of Gzela. So then when I, as the Gazlan, went ahead and drank the barrel of wine, what more am I doing? Why should I pay four zuz? I should pay the original one zuz because that was the value at the time of the Gzela. And when I drank the barrel of wine, I wasn't doing another Maisa Gzela. The only Maisa Gzela I was done was the initial one when I took it out of the owner's Rishus. But once it was out of the owner's Rishus, I can't steal it again. Once I stole it, once it's out of the owner's Rishus, that's it. So why should I have to pay the value of four zuz? What's the Mechayev? What obligates me as the Gazan to pay the higher value when I didn't do a new Maisa Gzela by breaking it? I didn't do a new Maisa Gzela because it's already out of the owner's Rishus. So says the Ktsois, the Mechayev is what? What do you think? If I'm not going to be chayef for another Maisa Gzela, so what am I going to be chayef for breaking or drinking the barrel of wine? I'm a mazik. I'm a damager. The barrel of wine doesn't belong to me. The barrel of wine doesn't belong to me. It still belongs to the original owner. The watch, when Dr. Katz steals it, it doesn't belong to Dr. Katz. It belongs to Howard. But when I go ahead and take it from Dr. Katz, I'm not doing a Maisa Gneva because it's no longer in the Rishus of Howard. I'm holding on to Howard's watch, but I'm not a Ganav. So in the case of Tabar Shaseh, when I steal the barrel of wine, and I go ahead and then subsequently break or drink the barrel of wine, what I'm doing is not a new Maisa Gzela, says the Ktsos. What I'm doing is breaking something that doesn't belong to me. And the regular halacha of Mazik is, when you damage something that belongs to someone else, you have to pay for the value of the object at the time of the damage. So says the Ktsos, the halacha of Tabar Shaseh, that you pay for the higher value, is based on the halacha of damage, of mazik. It's not that you're doing a new Maisa Gzela, because says the Ktsos, you can't do a new Maisa Gzela. Once the object was stolen and taken out of the owner's rishus, you can't do a new Maisa Gzela. So that what obligates you in paying the higher value of the barrel of wine is the fact that you are damaging something that doesn't belong to you. It's mazik. It's mazik. And that's why you pay the value of four zuz. However, if the object breaks on its own, like the Gemara says, isbar memela, if it breaks on its own, how much do you pay? You pay one zuz, says the Ktsos. The reason is because when it breaks on its own, you haven't done anything new. You haven't done any new maisik zela, and you haven't done any mazik. So therefore, what the mechayev is, the original maisik zela that you did at the time of the theft, and that at that point, it was only worth one zuz. Okay, so the idea of the Ktsos is that once an object was taken out of the original owner's rishus, that is the maisik zela, and any other type of theft that happens on that object can't be called gzela. And any damage that happens to that object can't be called gzela, it's called mazik. Because the Ktsos says that the definition of gneva, the definition of gzela is gunav mibeis ha'ish, it has to be taken from the owner's rishus. Once it's out of the owner's rishus, not that it's fair game, I still have to give back the watch to Howard, but when I took it from Dr. Katz, I'm not a ganav. So it's a funny thing, right? But the Ktsos is telling us that you can have someone who's holding on to someone else's property, but he's not a ganav. You can have a shomer. He's like a shomer, in a sense. A shomer is holding on to someone else's property. He's not a ganav because he has the right to hold on to it. Here, I don't have the right to hold on to it. I have to eventually give it back. But since I didn't take it from the owner's rishus, I'm not considered a ganav. And Tabar Shaseh, the mechayev is mazik. That's the idea of the Ktsos, the groundbreaking chiddush of the Ktsos. The Nesivus HaMishpat, Rabbi Yaakov Miliso. So he disagrees with the Ktsos. So just before we go further, the Ran, in his commentary here on the Gemara Bava Metzia, seems to say explicitly like the Ktsos. You see in source 4, he says, Miu Tabar Shaseh Misham Dalad. Why? Why does he pay the higher value of 4? The Chemen Da'ovet Ihu Biadayim, since he broke or drank the barrel of wine actively, Hashta Mazikla. Diika be'ena hadra, he damages it at that moment. Meaning the Ran is telling us that what obligates him to pay out a higher value is not a new Maisa Gzela. It's not that he's doing a new act of thievery by breaking or drinking the barrel of wine. Rather, it's damaging something which doesn't belong to him, and for that he has to pay the higher value. Okay, so the Ran corroborates the shita of the Ktsois. Now, the Nesivus disagrees, and the Nesivus thinks that the Mechayiv of Tavar Shase is not based on Mazik, rather it's based on Gezela. Well, how could that be? Isn't the Ktsois right that once an object is taken out of the owner's reshus, it can no longer be considered a Maisa Gneva? Isn't the Ktsois right that once Dr. Katz takes the watch from Howard, and I take it from Dr. Katz, I'm not a Ganav because it was already out of the reshus of Howard? So how can the Nesivus say that the case of Tavar Shase is Gzela? I stole the barrel of wine. So at that moment, it's no longer in the reshus of the owner, correct? I go ahead and I drink the wine, or I break the barrel of wine. How can you call me a ganav again? I already did the Maisa Gneva. It was already out of the reshus of the ganav. So how can you call me a ganav squared when I did the initial Maisa Gneva? It was no longer the reshus of the owner. Aren't I a mazik? Isn't the ksos right? Says the Nesivus, not so fast, not so fast. Even if you accept the ktsos is hanacha, the ktsos is the assumption that once the object is no longer under the auspices, under the jurisdiction of the owner, you can no longer call him a geneva, you could still explain, and this is going to be very very fine chiluk, says the Nesivus, you can still explain Tavar Shase based on a second Maisa Geneva. How so? So I think we've discussed on different occasions, but there are really two aspects to ownership in halacha. There's what we call shalo, and there's what we call birshusa, right? Those are the two aspects of ownership. Shalo means I am the owner of the object. It belongs to me. I am the bailam. I have the rights of usage on the object. Shalo. Birshuso means it is under my auspices. I am holding on to the object. It is in my property. However, let's say someone else steals my object. The Gemara in Bava Kama tells us that I retain ownership. If Dr. Katz were to take my pen, it's a very cool pen. So if Dr. Katz were to take my pen, it still belongs to me. It doesn't belong to Dr. Katz. But the Gemara says, now it's no longer Birshusi, it's Birshus Dr. Katz. It's my pen, it's Shali. The Eina Birshusi, it's in the Rishus of Dr. Katz. So you see that you can bifurcate these two aspects of ownership. There's Shalo, ownership of the object, who does it belong to, and Birshuso, who's holding on to the object? Whose property is the object in? Who has Shlita over the object? Those are the two ideas of Shalo and Birshuso. So says the Nesivus, in the case of Gonei Minaganov, or Hacholik Imaganov, when I divide the spoils with Dr. Katz. So what happened? It's true. It's true that when Dr. Katz steals the object from Howard, so it still belongs to Howard. It's still Shalom. But it's no longer Birshuso, it's Birshus Dr. Katz. So that's true. That's true. And therefore, if I go ahead and steal from Dr. Katz, I haven't done any additional Maisa Gneva because it's no longer Birshus Dr. Katz. It's no longer Birshus Howard. There's no nafkamina. I haven't done any additional Maisa Gneva. However, think about the case of Tavar Ushasya. What's the case? I stole a barrel of wine. So now the barrel of wine belongs to the original owner. However, it's no longer in the reshus of the original owner. It's in the reshus of the ganav. Correct? Now, the ganav goes ahead and drinks the wine or breaks the wine. What happens to the wine? It disappeared. It's gone. Can you say that the original owner is still the owner of the wine? No, because it doesn't exist anymore. Now, the original owner is going to be entitled to compensation, but the wine no longer exists. So says the Nesivus, when the ganav breaks the barrel or drinks the wine, he's done an additional maisa gzela. Why? Because the original theft, which what resulted in the barrel still being intact, all that accomplished was that it made it no longer in the reshus of the original owner. But it still belonged to the original owner. Then when the ganav broke the barrel of wine or drank the wine, he removed the second aspect of ownership from the original owner. Now, it's not only shalo birshuso, it's even shalom but shalom. It's no longer belongs to the original owner because it's gone. So says the Nesivis, even if you assume that the Ksos is correct, that once you steal something, you can't steal it more, that's not always true. That's always true. Sometimes you could do another Maisa Gzela, another Maisa Gneva, if you make it no longer shalom of the original owner. If you destroy the object, you make it kaboof, it's no longer in the world. So then at that point, it's Eino Shalov, Einer Veshuso, you've done another Maisa Gneva, and says the Nesiva, that's why Tavra Oshasye, you pay the higher value. Not like the Ktso said, the reason you pay the higher value is because you've done an act of Mazik, because you've damaged something which doesn't belong to you. Says the Nesiva, no, it's because you've become a Gazlan squared. You've done another Maisa Gzela. Wait a second, how could you do another Maisa Gzela? Wasn't it already stolen from the time that you took the barrel from the original owner? Says the Nesiva, yes, that's true. But at that point in time, it was shalom v'iner b'shuso. It belonged to the original owner still, even though it wasn't in b'shus. Now that you destroy the barrel, it's not even shalom anymore. It doesn't belong to him anymore. You have to compensate him. So says the Nesivis, that's why the chiyuv of Tavr Shasi, paying the higher value, is for the second Maisa Gzela, the second Maisa Gneva. Not like the Ksos says, because of damage, rather because of Gzela. So we have a fundamental machlokas.
Why isn't it just two times?
What do you mean?
Why isn't the higher amount two times? Why is it four times?
Good question, because the halach is that the kol ha-gazlanim mishalmin kishasek zela. Whenever you steal an object, what gets locked in, whatever the value of the object was at the time of the theft, that's what you have to pay. So if you assume that at the time that you broke the barrel, you're considered a ganav again, so it's locked in the value of the barrel at that time that you drank the barrel, you broke the barrel, the value that it was worth at that time, you have to pay to the original owner. Kefel, double, is only when you steal something and Adam catch you, so the halacha is you pay double. In this case, it's even if Adam, you know, didn't catch you, you were a gazlan. Gazlan doesn't pay dalad v'hei, or kefel. Only a ganav pays kefel. This is even a gazlan, kol ha-gazlan mishalem kishasek zela. So says the Nesivis, since when you drank the barrel, it was a new maisa gzela, therefore you became obligated to pay for the value of the barrel at the time of the theft, when you drank the barrel or you broke the barrel. Yeah.
Your watch case, your hustle agent, if you took the watch and broke it, you stole the watch from someone else, you're not hustle agents.
Ah.
But instead of stealing the watch, you stole it and broke it.
Ah. Excellent. So what Evan is saying is there comes out another nafkamina between the Ksos and the Sivis, not only in terms of what's the lumdus behind Tavr Shasi, is it Midin Mazik or Midin Gazlan? It comes out a nafkamina in the case that we started with, in terms of Hilchos Eidus. But again, the Tumim's question is, what's the difference between a person, a Ganav, is Pasul Eidus, and the Cholikim, a Ganav, is not Pasul Eidus, right? When Dr. Katz steals the watch, he's Pasul Eidus, but when I split the value, when I split the proceeds, the profit of the watch, I'm not Pasul Eidus. Why not? So the Ksos explained the reason is because I'm not a Ganav. Even if I'm holding on to something, money that doesn't belong to me, if I didn't take the object from the original owner's reshus, I'm not considered a Ganav. So the Ksos explained, even if I'm holding on to money that doesn't belong to me, I'm not a Ganav until I take it. So Dr. Katz, who took it from Howard, he's going to be considered a Ganav. However, I, who am splitting the proceeds with Dr. Katz, I'm not considered a Ganav. That was the Ksos. But the Nesivis disagrees with the Ksos, but Evan pointed out that Nesivis thinks if I do something, let's say I steal the watch from Dr. Katz and then I break it. So now, what would the Nesivis say about that? So the Ksos would say, you're a Mazik, but you're not a Gazlan because the object was already out of the Rishus of Howard. But what would the Nesivis say about that? So Evan's pointing out that according to the Nesivis, the halacha would be that I am considered a Gazlan. Why? Because when I broke the watch that I stole from Dr. Katz, that he stole from Howard, sounds like Chagadiah, that I broke the watch that he stole from, that Dr. Katz, that he took from Howard, so says the Nesivis, I'm doing another Maisik Zela. I'm not just a Mazik. Why? Because when I stole the object from Dr. Katz, it still belonged to Howard. But then when I broke the watch, it no longer belongs to anyone. Maybe I'm calling it because it's a shinoi. It no longer belongs to Howard, so therefore, now, not only is Dr. Katz a Gazlan, I'm also going to be a Gazlan. So it comes out even a nafkamina in terms of Hilchos Eidus, that according to the Ksos, in that case, I'm not going to be possible Eidus because I'm not a Ganav, but according to the Nesivis, since I did an additional Maisa Gzela by breaking it, rendering it no longer shaloh of Howard, I'm going to be considered a Goslin even according to the Nesivis. So either way, very good. So either way, what comes out is a fundamental machlokus between the Ktos and the Nesivis as to what's the nature of the halacha of Tabir Shasi. Is it Midin Mazik like the Ktos? Because you can't have a Maisik Zela after Maisik Zela. Once it's stolen, that's it. Shalom al Yisrael. Or do we say, like the Nesivis says, that no, you can as long as you've done something significant afterwards. Like you've broken the object, you've rendered it ownerless, you've done something to take it completely out of the ownership of the original owner, then the Nesivis thinks that you can have a subsequent Maisik Zela. And you can look, Rashi in source 6 in the Gemara here on Daf Mem Gimel sounds like the Nesivis. It sounds like from Rashi that the Mechai of a Tabir Shasi is that we treat it as a subsequent, a second Maisik Zela, not as a Maisa of Mazik, according to the Ktos. Okay.
Does the reverse hold true as well, that the value is 1, then it goes to 4, but if it goes down in value?
For sure. Meaning that's obvious. If you steal it and it's worth 4 zuz, and then it goes down in value, call it Kazlan Mishalom Kshasik Zela, that you have to pay the higher value. Now, if the object is still Ben, you can just return the object.
Well, I'm saying, but if you, in the case where you stole it at 1, and then you used it and broke it, and now it was worth 4, you owe 4.
You pay 4, exactly.
So if it was worth 4, though, at the time you stole it, and when you broke it, it was only worth 1, you still owe 4.
Yeah, exactly. If it's still around, you can return it, even though now it's worth less than when you originally stole it. But if you... You denied him his use, correct. But I think what Ellie's pointing out is, why don't we say that now you've done a new Maisik Zela, so we should bump down, we should scale back the. So I think the answer is no, because it's not going to be a kula.
Exactly.
It's not going to be lenient. When you do another Maisik Zela, we're not going to have a leniency for you. But as long as the object is banned, you can return it as is, even if it's worth less. That's a halacha which we learned many times above a kama of Hari Shel Chalafanecha. You're allowed to give the the original object even if it's worthless.
Yeah.
Even if it's or not, potentially. Okay. That was the heavy-duty lifting. Now we're going to segue to the second part of the sugya, which is a little lighter. On Omid Beis, we have the mission about Shlichas Yad. What's Shlichas Yad? So again, we said beforehand that if you're a shomer of a pikadon, you're watching an object for someone else. So unless you're a shoel, you're not allowed to use the object. If you're shomer chinam, shomer sacher, you're not allowed to use the object. However, if you do Shlichas Yad, which means you use the object, the halacha is that you become obligated in onsen. Even if you are Shomer Chinam and normally you're only obligated in Pshia, which is negligence, if you do Shlichas Yad, you use the object inappropriately, without Rishus, the halacha is that you become obligated in onsen, and anything that happens to the object, even if it was something which was beyond your control, you become obligated to pay for the damages. That's the halacha of Shlichas Yad. And there's a major machlokas between Bisham and Bisila. What's the halacha of Hachoshev L'Shloach Yad? Does Shlichas Yad require Shlichas Yad Mamish? You actually have to use the object. That's the opinion of Beis Hillel. And Beis Shammai says you don't actually have to use the object. What do you have to do? So the Mishnah says in Source 7, Bav Metziah Ben Gimel Beis, Hachoshev L'Shloach Yad B'Bikadon. Literally, a person thinks that he's going to use the object that he's watching. Beis Shammai Omrim Chaya, Beis Hillel Omrim Eino Chayv Ashish Lo Yad, Shnemar, Im Lo Shalch Yad, Yadav B'Mlech Esrael. Beis Shammai thinks that you're chayv even if you're just choshev l'shloch yad b'bikadon, and Beis Hillel says you're only chayv once you actually do shlichas yad, once you actually use the object. So what does it mean hachoshev l'shloch yad? So the simple translation of the Mishnah is what?
Intention.
Even if you don't actually do it or say it, but you have the intention of doing shlichas yad, that alone is enough to obligate you in onsen according to Beis Shammai. Says Rashi on the Mishnah, source 8, Hachoshev L'Shloach Yad, Amar Bifnei Eden, Etol Pikdono Shel Ploni La'atzmi. Says Rashi, even though the Mishnah says Hachoshev, which, like Dr. Katz translated correctly, means he has the intention of doing Shlichas Yad, nevertheless, Rashi translates it as saying in front of Eden, I am going to go ahead and use the object that belongs to Ploni that I'm supposed to be watching. Meaning, Rashi says, when the Mishnah says choshev, it doesn't really mean choshev. It's lav davka. It really means he says it in front of Eden. So Rashi thinks that even the Pinya Beis Shammai, who says you don't need mamash shlichas yad, but you need a verb, it sounds like from Rashi, you need a verbal declaration that the shomer is going to inappropriately use the object without rishus. It's not enough to think it. He needs to say it, declare it, in front of Eden. That is what seems to come out from Rashi. And Tosa says the same thing here in source 11. Tosa says, Achoshe l'shloch yad, take a look in source 11. Tosa says, Hach machshava have dibor. Even though the Mishnah uses the word choshev machshava, which usually means thought, intention, nevertheless, Tosa says it doesn't really mean that. It means dibor, it's a verbal declaration. Shem Amar, O choshev l'shloch yad b'bigadon, harihu b'rshuso, me'osa shava ilach, l'eschai b'chol onsin. Says Tosfos that what it means to say is, if he verbally declares that he's going to use the object, at that point, from that moment of verbal declaration, it becomes the responsibility of the shomer to make sure that no damage happens, even damage of onsen. So again, Tosfos and Rashi think that when Beis Shammai says hachoshev l'shloch yad b'pikadon, doesn't really mean choshev. Choshev doesn't mean thought and intention. It means with dibor, a verbal declaration. Now,
so with a verbal declaration, you now have witnesses. So you've expressed it.
Exactly.
So if you have intention, nobody knows what your intention is.
Oh, very good. So Dr. Andrew, you bring a very good point. We're going to address that in a moment. So now, the Bach points out that Rashi seems to contradict himself. Meaning Rashi here in Bava Metzia says, Hachoshev l'shloch yad b'pikadon doesn't really mean choshev, it means a verbal declaration in front of Edom. The problem is that Rashi in Maseches Kiddushin doesn't say that. Rashi in Maseches Kiddushin says, when Beis Shammai holds Hachoshev l'shloch yad b'pikadon, Rashi says, even b'machshava. Take a look in source 10, L'chayv al machshava, says Rashi, O al hadibor shim omar, then what's the next line? O choshev l'shloch yad b'pikadon, meaning Rashi says choshev l'shloch yad b'pikadon could be done in one of two ways. Either a verbal declaration or intention, thought to use the object inappropriately. So Rashi gives two options, and Rashi entertains the possibility that according to Beis Shammai, you'd be chayv even for intention alone. So the Bach points out, the Bach notes, doesn't Rashi seem to contradict himself? On the one hand, the Rashi in Maseches Bava Metzia says, Choshev yishloch yad b'pikadon means dibor, in front of Edom, like Dr. Katz said, that you declare in front of Edom that you're going to use the object. Yet Rashi in Maseches Kiddushin says, Hachoshev yad yishloch yad b'pikadon could mean thought, it could be intention. So isn't this, at first glance, a contradiction in Rashi? Everyone here, the contradiction? This choshev yad, choshev, machshava, does it mean machshava mamish, or does it mean dibor? So Rashi in Bava Metzia says like Tosfos that machshava really means dibor, but Rashi in Kiddushin says that machshava could mean machshava, even intention alone could obligate the shomer in using the pikadon to be chayv and onsen. Everyone hear the apparent contradiction in Rashi. Any thoughts? Any possible resolution? And it's touching on something that Dr. Katz said beforehand. So the Gilyone Hashas, Rav Yosef Engel, says a very, very simple way, simple understanding to resolve the contradiction in Rashi. Really, Rashi fundamentally thinks, he suggests, that machshava alone is enough to obligate the shomer in the object. Really, like the Mishnah says, Hachoshev l'shloch yad b'pikadon, right? Machshava alone is significant enough. Intention to use the object inappropriately is enough, according to Beis Shammai, to obligate the shomer in onsen. So why did Rashi say in Maseches Bava Metzia that machshava means a verbal declaration in front of Edom? Says the Gilyone Hashas, very practical, very, very, very simple. He says that how else would the Beis Din know to obligate the shomer in onsen? Unless the guy goes ahead and says, oh, you should know that I was a shomer and I had intention of using the object, and then some onis happened, unless he's a very honest guy, the Beis Din is not going to be able to obligate him in any damage that happens to the object. Yet the Mishnah says in Bava Metzia that when according to Beis Shammai, Hachoshev l'shloch yad b'pikadon, he's chayev. And the word chayev implies that Beis Din is going to be able to obligate the shomer in paying money. But how does the Beis Din know? How can the Beis Din prove that the shomer had intention of using the object inappropriately? Says Rashi, because what did he do? He declared this in front of Adam, that he has intention of using the object. Not that Rashi thinks that fundamentally, in order to be chayiv, in order to be chayiv and onsin, you need a verbal declaration. From a practical standpoint, how is Beis Din going to be able to obligate the guy to pay without any witnesses, unless the guy admits, without any witnesses, Beis Din is not going to be able to exact payment from the Shomer. That's why Rashi says in the Mishnah Bava Metzia that it has to be that there was a verbal declaration in front of Edom. But fundamentally, Rashi thinks that, according to Beis Shammai, it's enough to have intention without a verbal declaration to be chayv and onsin, not like Tosfos. Lamaisa, there's a major machlokas we've shown him, aside from Rashi and Tosfos, is the famous comment of the Rush in Hilchos Sefer Torah. There, the Rush is talking about the halacha of Lishma. Now, we know when you're if you're a sofer and you're writing a Sefer Torah, you're writing tefillin, you're tanning, you're doing ibud of the klaf. So the halacha is that all those things have to be done lishma. They have to be done for the sake of the mitzvah of ksiva Sefer Torah, for the sake of the mitzvah of tefillin. And the Rush quotes from Rabbeinu Baruch a fascinating suffix. When the sofer is writing a Sefer Torah, he's writing the Shem Hashem, he's doing something for the sake of the Torah, something for the sake of the tefillin, does he need to have a verbal declaration? L'shem mitzvahs k'siva sefer Torah. L'shem mitzvahs tefillin. Or now matzah is being baked, or it was baked already a long time ago. So do they have to declare l'shem matzahs mitzvah? Or is it enough to have in mind that you are doing it for the sake of the mitzvah? Whenever you need l'shma, Do you need a verbal declaration that it's being done for the sake of that mitzvah? Like a get. A get needs to be written l'shma. So does the sofer, when writing the get, have to make this verbal declaration that he's doing it for the purpose of the mitzvah of writing a get? Or is it enough to have the intention, to have the thought, that it's doing l'shma, it's being done l'shma for the sake of the mitzvah? That is Rabbeinu Baruch's suffix. And the Rush points out that we have different halachos which seem to indicate different things. For example, when it comes to truma, when you separate truma, the halacha is, for Dr. Katz, the halacha is that truma is allowed to be separated with machshava. You don't need a verbal declaration. I can have in mind, when I separate something, I can have in mind that I want it to be truma without verbally declaring it to be truma. That's the Gemara of Darshan from Nech Shalachan Shumaschan, that truma is nital b'machshava. Says the Rush. However, we know when it comes to shlichas yad, when it comes to shlichas yad, the halacha is that even though it says al kol devar pesha, if you have machshava alone, says the Rush, also machshava alone is sufficient. In other words, the Rush learns, like one line in Rashi, or the Gilyoni Ashas's line in Rashi, not like Tosfos, that when it comes to shlichas yad, machshava alone, like truma, machshava alone is sufficient in order to be mechayv and osin. So therefore, we have certain halachos which require dibor, certain halachos which require machshava. Therefore, Rabbeinu Baruch, the Rush quotes Rabbeinu Baruch, who suggests that l'chumra, a sofer should always declare lishma, that he's doing it, and that's, I think, the minug, that the soferim always say, they make a verbal declaration that they're doing the writing and the tanning of the klaf for the sake of the mitzvah. They make a verbal declaration. But the Rush, the Sof Varav, said, he didn't even quote anyone who argues, he just took it for a davar pasha, that the halacha is, when it comes to shlichas yad, hachoshev l'shloach yad. So, unfortunately, we ran out of time, but there are a lot of rayos back and forth as to who's right, gemaras and zvachim. But we'll leave it at that. There's a machlokas. Rishonim, in terms of Beis Shammai Shita, chosheh l'shloach yad, does it mean intention, or does it mean a verbal declaration that you're going to steal it? So, we'll leave it at that. Yashu koyach. Everyone should have a chag kosher v'sameach.